You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for April 4th, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we want to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we'd like to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat feature, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by recapping last week's weekly tittle, which was called Ready for Action. The assignment was to reset your command center with a focus on how you use the space. Let's hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook who reset or at least reevaluated their command center this week. Please let us know in the comments. Frequent participant Kara shared her thoughts on this tittle in an email to us. Kara wrote, "This tittle was so helpful. I love how Gail frames the assignment as resetting. This reframing changed the negative connotation in my mind from cleaning up or doing a chore to something that I'm doing for myself and my future pleasure. It's a discipline that for me is losing the feel of punishment or dread and increasing the feel of self-love and proactiveness."
This makes me so happy. I love that you got into a place of self-care and being proactive. And that has a good connotation to you instead of feeling like punishment. That's totally a mind shift that lets you do what you need to do and feel good about it. And what more can you ask than that? Big congrats. Sometimes we just have to think about it differently to make it work for us. And that is thrilling for me. I love those kinds of mental shifts for people because it always feels like a huge breakthrough and a big change, and anything that makes it easier for you makes me happy. So thank you so much for sharing that. That really makes me happy.
Marsh says, "We're placing bets on Ed not talking." I mentioned before we started the recording that my allergies are bad, so I'm going to try and talk as little as possible. Marsh, I think, is betting against. Let's see.
They know you so well, Ed.
Sorry, lots of people talking about what their cats are up to. Deborah said, "I put away a couple of heavy coats to make space for spring coats." That's not specific to this week's tittle, but good work.
But it's the time for it, and good job.
M said, "I didn't do the reset, but discovered one of those piles that had been invisible to me when I was trying to reorganize my workspace. Oh. I was so surprised to see that the entire area was buried."
And now you have a new project to work on. Nothing like digging out and finding another pile to mess with, right?
Right. Bridget said, "I did not need to reset. Had done that some time ago," I think she meant. "So okay. I worked on my binders and have now done about 6 of them. Yay."
Hey, that's great.
Lisa Beth said, "I did the reset and love the feeling of working in a clean area."
There you go, right? Like, that's the whole goal of making it function, because you got to sit there and do stuff. You got to sit there and be actively doing whatever it is that your projects are. And so, great job. I'm glad you like it.
Jimmy said, "I have 3 command zones. Seating area in the dining room where my husband and I eat. I also work on budgeting here and sometimes do my nails. Number 2 is bed and nightstand where I read and play games. Number 3 is my desk in my office where I work. I feel like I keep number 1 and 2 relatively neat, but number 3 gets chaotic every day. And I'm realizing this is the real key part. This was, you could see this is a little long, but it's also a great comment. I'm realizing that I have systems for my nail polish, where I store it, taking my things to the dining table, putting them back when I'm done. I also have a very strict setup for my bed because I used to sleep with half of my bed covered in junk, but I made a rule not to do that anymore. So I always clear it off before sleeping each night. I need a similar routine for my desk, but the extra space I have on that desk gives me the illusion of having space for clutter.
Right. And what she's really saying is she's already figured out her reset process.
For two of three areas.
Right. And yeah. So the reset process in the dining room and in the bedroom are automatic, and she does it without thinking, and she has no such reset in the desk area. And so great that you figured that out, Jimmy. And thank you for making the comment. And I'm sure that you can work it out. Having a desk be a broader flat surface. We all understand that the allure of the flat surface. It's always a place that we want to put stuff on. And so it's just a matter of looking at what's on that flat surface and deciding what the reset process would be. I mean, the way that we talked about it last week and the steps to get there, you can apply them to the desk and design what's going to be your reset for the night in the office, especially when you're spending, you know, if you're working in there. And I'm extrapolating from the word work, that maybe that's how your work day is happening, and you're going in there for several hours during the day, which means that there's a lot going on in there and it's a recurring place, right? You need it to be functioning every day. So worth the effort to figure out what's being stored there and to create some systems and a reset process for it every night. And then, you know, you'll start your work day and not walk in and look at the desk and go, ugh.
Jimmy's carefully looking at the way she does things, noticing
what's working.
What's working and what's not. CJ did an off tittle tittle. So a substitute tittle, which is always acceptable.
Yes, absolutely.
CJ said, last Tuesday night, a friend in Belgium asked me to take in last minute his mother-in-law stranded in my town for the week.
Oh my gosh.
After failing to find any other friends with an empty guest room due to spring break, I was forced to purge everything in my junk room into the living room to set up again the guest bed, a desk, and chair. All stuff shifting, but quite an achievement in just a few hours.
Wow. That is a lot.
The forced reorganization. Never the best.
Right. And then it means that the living room kind of got destroyed because it all came out into the living room. That's amazing. Well, so kudos for you for supporting your friend's mother. That's very lovely. And
mother-in-law.
And what a project to get ready for that. And once the mother-in-law goes away, then you're going to have to unbury your living room. And so I'm guessing now would be a good time, since it's all out of the room, for you to be very careful about what you put back and deciding what needs to stay. It may be time for, the forced entry of the empty of the room has created a situation where you can go and look at all the contents again and see if it all needs to stay there. Some of it can go away.
Anya reports, I reset my command center yesterday evening. Felt very good.
Yay. Good job. Go Anya.
And here's a great comment from Linda in Pennsylvania. Resetting my desk after use is like putting out a welcome mat to invite myself back into the space next time.
Isn't that so true? Because if it's a disaster, when you first walk in, wow, that is a negative incentive to go to the desk 100%. So I love the idea of creating, and that sort of goes along with what Cara said earlier, right? Like we're making it welcoming, and you're caring for yourself by making it look nice and be comfortable for you to come back to it again. And I love the idea of thinking of it as putting out the welcome mat for when you have to come back to the desk. I like that. It's a good visual.
Marsh shared, bringing awareness to my feel. That was in quotation marks. After my reset, I wrote this on a card, and now it sits prominent in my eye line each day. This is my command center. Feels really efficient, and the flow is fabulous.
Oh, there you go. That's your target that you're aiming for every day, and you're giving yourself a visual card to remind yourself. That's excellent.
Okay, I think we should get on with our topics because you have a lot to say.
I did have a lot to say. It's true.
This week, Gail attended the annual summit of the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals, aka NAPO, in Las Vegas. Gail, what do you have to report on the latest in the latest news, trends, ideas, and products in the organizing industry?
What a great time for me. I have a whole bunch to say. I took some really amazing classes. I had a dinner with a whole table of new organizers. I hung out with my friends, but my most important achievement, which I have to say, I'm claiming it, is I showed up at 7:30 in the morning, 3 days in a row, thank you, dressed with makeup on. It's a mark of respect for my colleagues that I'll do that, although I do complain about it a whole lot while it's happening. But I was like, I have 7:30 meetings every day. I hate 7:30 on principle, and I made it happen anyway in complete gear. And so I just want kudos for that.
Good
from
job.
All of the other night people, right? Ed would have been able to do it. He would have been fine. I, on the other hand, find 7:30 scary and inappropriate.
I would just have to avoid anything that's in the 3 hours after lunch when I would prefer to be sleeping.
Right. So I wanted to give some quick info from one of the classes that I took because it was really a fascinating class. But first, I want to shout out to any of my NAPO colleagues who are listening to this show, especially if it's your first visit. I hope you put your business name and your Zoom ID so I can see that you're here. And I had Saturday night dinner with three class of 2020 organizers. And what that means to me is that they started their business in 2020. And so they're all sort of at the same point in their business development. Two of the ladies were from Ohio and one was from Dallas. And they were having so much fun at their first conference. And they reminded me what it was like to go to my first conference. And funnily enough, my first conference was actually in Reno, which is another casino town. And that's not a theme of NAPO conferences normally. But anyway, we talked about various aspects of running an organizing business. And I really enjoyed reminding them to value what they do and to give value to it. We provide an important skill to those who don't have that skill and who really need it from us. And we all need to stand tall in our belief that we can offer valuable support and it's worth being paid well for it. Anyway, I loved meeting them and I hope to see them in the NAPO universe in the future. I went to a panel discussion on neurodiversity given by some serious experts in this area. These were all people who are part of the Institute of Chronic Disorganization, ICD. And they're also members of NAPO, but they're members of this other organization as well. That originally started life as the National Study Group on Chronic Disorganization. So it's a heavy education and research group. And so four women came to talk about various areas of neurodiversity. And as it shows up in ADHD clients, aging clients, clients with anxiety and depression, and hoarding disorder clients. So I'm just going to extract a little bit from each of those sections. They had great statistics and good information, and I just wanted to give you some little snippets out of the class that I thought were fascinating. For the ADHD section, I'm going to give you some stats that I found interesting. These are percentages of people diagnosed with ADHD. So worldwide, that's worldwide, 17.2% of children under the age of 18 are diagnosed with ADHD, 17%. Worldwide adults, it's 3.4%. In the United States, it's 4.4% of adults, but here's the extra little statistic that breaks down that 4.4% of the adults. 38% of them are women and 62% of them are men. That surprised me a lot. That's roughly one-third women to two-thirds men with that ADHD diagnosis. And depending on the study, because there's more than one, of course, between 15 to 27% of all patients that are seeking outpatient mental health services have ADHD. So basically, from just under a quarter to almost a quarter, just over a quarter, depending on whose study you're reading, are all of those people that are looking for mental health services outpatient come with ADHD, which means that everybody is struggling to cope. From the aging client section, this was the next topic, some more cool stats. Between 2020 and 2060, so just under 40 years from now, the category of older adults is predicted to increase by 69%, from 56 million to almost 95 million. But here's the crazier one. While the adults over 85 is expected to triple from 6.7 million to 19 million. The idea that adults over 85 is going to triple is amazing to me. Clearly, this is going to be a growing market of people that will need organizing help to manage their daily life and their life transitions as well. This population is starting to have difficulty with independent activities of daily living, like housework, shopping, finances, medication, just to name a few. Organizers are going to be supporting this client population with all these things, especially if the family members don't live nearby. From the anxiety and depression section, we discussed anxiety as an affliction. Anxiety is characterized by persistent, excessive worry, being overly concerned about money, health, family, or work. A person with anxiety has difficulty controlling the worry and may worry even though there's no cause to be worrying about. The official diagnosis is generalized anxiety disorder, or GAD, and it affects 3% of the population. And this is another part that was surprising to me, with women twice as likely to be affected. So ADHD diagnosis, it's a third and two-thirds of men, but in generalized anxiety disorder, it's twice as likely for women to be affected. That one did not surprise me, actually. And the highest risk is, which this is crazy, the highest risk is between childhood and middle age, which basically sounds like your whole life to me. And weirdly, the cause is unknown. We're not really sure how somebody ends up with generalized anxiety disorder. There's no really information about why that happens. One more stat here that was valuable to me. The most common form of depression is major depressive disorder, and it's the leading cause of disability in the U.S. among people between the ages of 15 and 44. That to me was shocking. The leading cause of disability for people in young adult to middle age is major depressive disorder. Not surprisingly, ADHD coexists a lot often with anxiety and depression. In case having one challenge isn't enough for you, that's a lot to deal with while trying to manage clutter in your space. So if you're one of those people that has ADHD and anxiety or depression, you're climbing over a lot of mountains to try to manage your clutter. And that's why having an organizer come and help you is so important, because you got a lot on your plate already. In the hoarding disorder section, I'm going to include some rating scales documents. These are documents that are used to rate the level of hoarding. They were scales that were created to help people diagnose where on the hoarding spectrum a particular client is, their spaces. We're trying to help professionals. They're going to be providing services to a client. And so these scales are available out there to look at, and we're going to drop some links in later. The clutter image rating scale in particular is really helpful because it's nine pictures of a progression of from hardly cluttered to really badly cluttered. And so over the nine photos, the room gets progressively more dense and chaotic. And it's a way to visually show you where you are on the hoarding, in the hoarding process, and where along a scale you might be. And so they show like a kitchen and a living room and a bedroom. And so you got all those visual pictures of, here's what a bedroom looks like as it goes from the least cluttered to the most densely out of control version, and gives you a visual to help you look at the pictures and go, oh, well, my house looks like picture number six. It's a way for you to gauge. There's also aside from the clutter image rating scale, which has the images, there's also a clutter rating scale, which is a levels 1 through 5, and it asks some questions and then sets you in a space along level 1 to 5. Those are both available from ICD, and the links will be below. There's also a fact sheet about collecting and compulsive inquiring or hoarding, so you can sort of understand the differences. And so we're going to put all those things down in your in the chat part in the chat, and then also later in the YouTube
on the in the YouTube, yeah, in the YouTube description, and we'll also have that on the show notes page.
Yeah, yeah. So you can go check them out. They're fascinating. They're super useful, and if you're a professional organizer, they're really helpful. If you want to get some support in evaluating clients that you might be helping, and psychologists use them to understand where, how far along they are in the hoarding process, and so they're very useful scales. And backed up by research, you know, they're not just made up from scratch. A little bit of the surface of all the great stuff I learned at NAPO's summit this year. If you're an organizer, you need to be there next year. It's going to be April 3rd through 5th in 2024, and it's going to be in Long Beach, California this time. So go to NAPO.net and look for registration information, and that mostly will show up starting in the early part of 2024. I mean, by definition, my client base is people that are struggling with organizing. And so, of course, the client base is going to be heavy with ADHD.
And then toward people with problems. Yeah.
And a lot of, I have had people with anxiety as well. And in particular, one client who, she used to take her anxiety medication right before we started working on the bills. She would go, she could not deal with the whole touching the mail thing. And so it took her about 18 months of us working together before she would even let me near the mail. And then once we started doing it, then she would have to go take anxiety meds in anticipation of us sitting there and working on the mail. I do have clients who have that anxiety response. And sometimes they tell me about it and sometimes they don't. But I can generally tell that someone is being anxious because their response to what I'm doing seems, they look very panicky when I start to touch or move things around. And I have to be reminded sometimes, if somebody tells me in advance, then I know to be more careful. But, you know, I just go up to a project and start plowing in. And sometimes I turn around and the person's like, oh, it's like, oh, wait, okay, I'm not destroying your life. I promise. We're going to put it back together. I promise. You know, there is some level of anxiety management that's necessary for me, because I don't want my clients to feel like I'm blowing them up. Like I don't want to trigger anxiety if I can help it. Now, usually my presence in the house by definition has triggered it at some level, but I want to try to be as soothing about it and calming about it as I can. And usually people that just have general anxiety, the whole idea of having an organizer come makes them twitch, and having people touch the stuff makes them twitch. But after we work together for a little bit, that sort of calms down when they realize that I'm not going to leave their house destroyed, and I'm not all the things that people worry about that might happen. You're going to throw my stuff away. You're going to be mean to me, blah, blah, blah. When none of those things happen, then it calms down for them. Hopefully, you know, I'm working with a client base of people that by definition don't have the skills on some level to do it themselves. And so that population is very dense with these diagnoses. I don't have a lot of hoarding clients. You know, it's been a while since I've had a real hoarding client, mostly because not because they're not there, but because I don't seek out that business. It's, you know, there are other organizers that prefer to do that, and I don't seek out those clients. But
well, and they're out there. And don't they almost always work in tandem with a psychological caregiver?
Yes.
Psychiatrist or psychologist, psychotherapist, yeah. Psychologist.
By nature, organizing is such a destructive process. You tear it all apart before you put it back together. And for someone who has hoarding syndrome, that's very assaulting. The idea of undoing the piles, moving it around, you know, we're destroying their mental map of where things are stored. We're destroying, you know, in theory, we're, depending on how bad it is, we may be throwing a bunch of stuff out. You know, that process is very traumatic for the person who is living with hoarding syndrome. And so you really, in that situation, as an organizer, as a professional, you need to be a very well trained to deal with that situation, lots of special work. And then secondly, you need to be supported by a psychological professional who can support the client in their emotional response to the process of having everything pulled apart, gone through, touched by everybody, unstacked, dismantled. Like, the whole process triggers a lot of emotional response, and they need that trained support for their emotional response as well. So yes, if you're going to do hoarding clients, A, as an organizer, A, you need to be very well trained, and B, you need to make sure that the client has psychological support before you try to do the job. Because otherwise, you know, you've all seen the hoarding show. There's always a psychologist on site working with the client. And there's a real reason for that, because they absolutely need that.
Well, I was really surprised by the ADHD stat about twice as many men being diagnosed as women. Mm. You know, my own anecdotal experience of just people who have told me they have ADHD, they're overwhelmingly women, but I also probably have more women friends than men friends.
I think are more willing to
talk about it,
decide that it's a problem, and go look for a diagnosis, and then talk about it.
CJ shared one specialist in ADHD said that he theorized, based on his own practice, that it might actually be 50-50 male-female, but females are underdiagnosed because it presents differently than the standard. The standard, which was based on male-only studies of the disorder. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if your subjects are all men, you're going to arrive at a set of symptoms that is male-centric.
Not exactly the same. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. This is why we have to have research and by gender, because it's always a little different, women and men.
Marcy,
just like, said, the heart attack symptoms are different women and men.
Right. Marcy commented, the thing is, there's also financial anxiety that prevents getting professional help. So that can anxiety, right? Compounding anxiety.
Exactly. 100%.
You know, my own take on anxiety is, I think I experienced some of that myself when I work with you. I don't know if you observed my anxiety. Mm. And for me, I would describe it as the chaos I know is less frightening than the change you propose.
That you can't imagine yet, right? Like you can't make that picture in your head. I have a picture, but you don't have the picture.
Right.
I think that's absolutely true. Because, and you know, my friend whose office I just worked in, we took apart her chiropractic office. And we started with this storeroom that had been being used as a storeroom for 2 decades. And we spent one Saturday afternoon or Saturday all day pulling all of the contents that had been wedged into the storeroom out. And they went out all over the medical office. I mean, it was everywhere and sorted into piles. And it was all stuff, you know, that we were going to go through and make decisions about. And the destruction part takes way longer than the installation part. Like, I know in my head that this is just stage one, and then it's going to look awful. And then we're going to go and put everything that we want to keep back and take all the trash out and take all the recycling out and, you know, take all the things to be donated out. And that all of this stuff is not going to go back in, and that it's going to look 1,000 times better when we're done. So I know that by experience and definition. But my client was looking at, you know, we got about 4 hours in and the room was finally empty and it was everywhere. And you could just see, she was just like holding onto the table, like, what on, oh my God, I have patients coming on Monday. Like, it can't be like this. And she couldn't imagine that we could then turn it around and get it all back in, set up correctly in a reasonable amount of time. And so I hold that picture in my head, and we had a lunch break, and at lunch I was like, it's okay. We're going to put it all back. We're at the fun part now. We're going to put the good stuff back. We're going to set up systems. It's going to look beautiful. And 2/3 of that stuff is going out. And so it's going to be okay. But she was very, very, you could tell that her anxiety level was off the charts because we had basically thrown all the contents of the storage unit, I mean, the storage room, into other parts of her office and made a big mess. And so I forget sometimes that to me, that's just a mess that is in mid-process and that we're going to finish it and put it away. But my clients who can't imagine the finished space anyway are looking at the mess and going, Gail, you just made it 1,000 times worse. What the hell? But it's my job to remind you, it's okay. I'm going to put it back. I promise. I promise it's going to look great at the end.
Okay. A couple of more quick things about NAPO before we move on. Bella asked whether anyone can register for NAPO conferences. Are they open to the general public?
If you want to come and pay the registration fee, you'll pay a non-member registration fee, which is higher. And I'm sure you would find it fascinating, but it's all going to be delivered. All of the presentations are delivered as if you're an organizer. So it'll just have that point of view from it. If you're interested as someone who is ADHD and you want to go to a conference that talks about ADHD, for instance, and coexisting things, CHADD, C-H-A-D-D, is an organization that puts on a conference every year that is about and for people that have ADHD. So it's then pitched, you know, the presentations are offered to the people diagnosed with ADHD as opposed to the people that will provide service to those clients. So yes, you can come to the conference and you may prefer to have one that's more aimed towards you.
CHADD is that CHADD.org if you want to check that out.
That's an acronym, of course, for something. And basically it's an organization specifically for those that are diagnosed with ADHD.
Okay. And then the other question about the conference, Connie asked, was there any talk on taking care of your health while working at clients to avoid dust, spores, contagion?
Yes, there's a lot of that. So safety is always a discussion to be had. And particularly when you are talking about working in a hoarding environment, you know, you got to get out the hazmat suits. It's a whole nother level of protecting yourself against contagion, bacteria, infection, viruses, biohazard, all that stuff. And so that's part of the advanced training that you need to have in order to work in a hoarding environment is to understand how to safely work in that environment so that no one gets ill or gets in trouble from being in that environment. Just in general, around working in a regular house, and yes, there are classes about safety measures and protecting yourself. And it's a good thing to take because when you wade in, sometimes, you know, there's a roach poop and there's rodent poop. And these are all, they all have their own biohazards to you in working in that environment. And so being aware of that and taking care of yourself is an important thing to learn as an organizer. Yes.
Okay, we need to get on to our other topic, which is the one that we're looking at there on the wall behind you.
Right.
A case study in Tetris organizing. Do your closets or storage spaces resemble a game of Tetris with every item, box, or bin carefully shoehorned into its designated slot? Gail's going to talk about the pitfalls of this style of Tetris organizing and suggest approaches that make it easier to use and maintain your storage spaces.
We landed on this topic because I have a long-term client whose house is an endless game of Tetris, and I was there last week. I have been helping him put disturbed Tetris piles back together for years. When I show up, we spend our time resetting all the destroyed storage for the last quarter's projects, which means that he's been living with the destroyed piles between my visits, and it only stays clear and put away for the day or two after I leave until the next project gets started. And then the Tetris is destroyed again. So what do I mean when I say a Tetris stash? So there's a difference between regular clutter stash and a Tetris style stash. So a regular clutter stash is you know, you open a drawer and it's a jumble of stuff. You open the closet and it's a jumble of stuff. It's not in any order. It's piled on top of itself. There, it's just a wall of chaos, right? That to me is sort of a normal style clutter stash where things are thrown into piles and it's chaotic looking and it makes no sense and it's a big mess. That's regular to me. A Tetris style stash is someone who thinks of themselves as very organized and they take a drawer, a closet, a room, a cabinet, a bookshelf, and they put as many things as possible into that space. And they organize it all very neatly so that it physically all actually fits into the cube that is the drawer, the big cube that is the closet, the big, you know, the cube that is a cabinet. They make it all fit. It's neatly stacked. It's parked in sections. It may have bins in there, but it is so densely packed that the entire cubic volume of the space is full. People that like Tetris style organizing, think of it as they're maximizing the use of the drawer or the cabinet. They're getting the most possible stuff put away that they can. And they usually fill up the space 100%. Like that's part of the drill, is that they take whatever cube exists and they completely fill it from top to bottom, back to front. So that when you open a door, when you pull out the drawer, when you walk into the closet, you hit a 100% packed space. Neatly packed, but 100% packed. That's the difference to me. It looks like this little Tetris game of making all the little squares fit into the empty holes. And once it's all fit together, then you have this wall of blocks that are all very specifically put together. And they can only be put together in one way to make a solid block. That's what makes it a problem for everybody else. It means that the Tetris style is very dense and stacked neatly, nested together very often, and parked in a very specific pattern to make it all fit in the designated space. That's really sort of the definition of Tetris. It means that accessing anything in the stash requires that you unbuild. Like if you want this cube down here, you got to unbuild all the stuff on top of it to get to it. So you have to take everything apart, get what you want out, and then you have to rebuild everything back the way that it was. And then when you're done with the thing you pulled out, you have to unbuild everything you have to take the Tetris apart in order to put the one thing back and then put the Tetris back. So it's a constant game of unbuilding the system and rebuilding the system. You unbuild it to take something out. You have to put the stuff back in that moment. Or like my client who I reset all the time, he unbuilds the Tetris and then leaves it all out, waiting for me to come and help him put it all back. And so you either spend all your time unbuilding, putting it back, using the thing you took out, unbuilding and rebuilding it to put it away, or you unbuild it and then it's a mess and you ignore it until somebody comes and helps you put it back together. This makes it very hard for other people to follow your system. It's almost impossible for anyone else in the house to understand the correct pattern for putting it all away in the correct Tetris stash. So your spouse, your kids, and your housekeeper are not going to be able to learn all the nuances of your Tetris building there. And you're always going to be annoyed at them because they don't understand your system. You'll feel like you're always having to correct everything that they put away because they didn't do it right. Well, of course, they don't know how. It takes a whole lot more time to build and maintain a Tetris style stash of items in any space because you are committing to constantly shuffling the stuff around. It's okay to do that when you're younger, and it gets less okay when you get older. My second Tetris client was an artist and a collector and had a two-story house. When her mother died, she inherited a house full of stuff in California. And so she started the process of integrating her mom's stuff with her stuff in her home. She hired me and an interior designer to merge all these things together and to make them look beautiful. I sorted and purged and organized the stuff, and the designer took the collections and made home decor out of a whole lot of it. She truly made it beautiful, but it took a really long time. It's a lot of effort and money to realize her dreams for her house, and for displaying all of her collections. So she simultaneously merged all that she inherited, displayed all her collections, and realized her artistic ideas for the house as one huge, massive project. The end result was fabulous, but we probably spent a year working on it. Then a few years later, she had a stroke, and afterwards she lost her ability to speak. She still understands what you're saying. She just can't respond to you. So that means her husband is now her interpreter and the keeper of the stuff. I'm going to guess that he does not store things the way that she did. And then they moved out of her Tetris house when he retired. She finally got her beautiful end result, her house decorated exactly how she envisioned, only to have a stroke a few years later and lose her ability to maintain it as she wanted it. It was all dismantled when she moved out. And, you know, that was sad to me. She had some other health issues. And so she was a relatively young person, I would say in her late 50s when she had the stroke. And so not a typical life situation for others, but it was such a massive project to make all of the pieces come together in her house. And then for her to have to move away and dismantle it all was like, oh man, you just got it how you wanted it. And now you have to take it all apart. And she was the person who was super mad at her husband because she she was a cook. She had a huge kitchen and all of her kitchen drawers had a whole bunch of kitchen gear very carefully nested inside these drawers in order for it all to fit. And that process, like he would go to get a bowl out of the mixing bowls and there would be, you know, 10 of them in varying sizes. And there, these six stacked together and those four stacked together, and they had to stack in a specific order and sit in a specific place in the drawer in order for it all fit and close the drawer again. And he would go get one out and use one, and then he would not be able to put it back in the right place afterwards. And it drove her crazy. It absolutely drove her crazy. And she was just like, he doesn't understand the concept of nesting. I'm like, no, your Tetris organizing is way too complicated for him. It's way too much for him to manage. He cannot extrapolate all of the things that have to be done, all the steps in what order have to be done in order for this one bowl to go back in and the drawer to be closed. And so I'm sure on the back end, he was quite happy to move out and be in charge of setting up the new house because they had a long-standing feud about why he couldn't nest the mixing bowls back where they went. It was an whole argument.
Let me share a couple of comments at this point. These are okay. We have pro and con comments. Actually, let me first. Tammy asked, "Is Tetris good or bad?" My answer to that would be, it's a question of whether it works for you or it doesn't. It's not a matter of good or bad.
I would say Tetris is hard. Tetris is an organizing style that is very difficult just because of the amount of time you have to expend to use it and maintain it. There's all these barriers to entry. It's so hard to get something out. It's so hard to put something back. And it exponentially grows the amount of time you have to spend maintaining it. And so from that standpoint, I find it a less desirable solution because it uses up so much of your time to be able to take things out and put them back.
Like over-engineered filing cabinets.
Exactly.
The filing cabinet that has 600 folders in it is much harder to use.
And maintain.
You spend a lot more time figuring out where things go when they need to go in it and figuring out where the heck you put something when it's time to take something out.
When you want something out, exactly. That's exactly right. That's perfect.
Here's a counterpoint. Eclair, who identifies herself as a Tetris organizer extraordinaire, says the unbuilding and rebuilding process is how I know what I have.
It is a refresher, isn't it? Like you it's sort of like moving where you have to take a whole bunch of stuff out of a cabinet and look at it to get to the one thing you want and then put it back. And so you are definitely laying hands on your things over and over and over again. And it helps you remember what you have 100%. And when the stash is that dense, you really do need frequent retouching to remember everything that's in there. You will not maintain a memory of all the things that you own if you don't constantly handle them and churn them and fiddle with them.
Pat says, my mother was a Tetris organizer and it was so impossible to actually get anything out to use. So I always considered her a pack rat.
Yeah. And, you know, she was just trying to be super organized about it. And it's also the intersection of someone who's trying to be organized and trying to avoid keep toss decisions. Anybody that is working that hard to fill up the whole cubic volume of every space that they have in a way that looks neat and or is stacked or organized by category or whatever, anybody that's working that hard is trying to not make keep toss decisions. They don't want to look at something and decide whether something needs to go or not. And they put themselves through a lot of extra storage work, management time, maintenance time, in order to keep everything and not try to evaluate it for whether it should stay or go.
Connie asks, aren't kitchen cabinets Tetris by nature?
Because they're only a foot wide. So yes, overhead kitchen cabinets are usually only 12 inches deep. Sometimes they're 14 inches deep. If it's really weird, they're 16 inches deep. But basically everything overhead is narrow and short. Then the cabinets below are probably deeper. They might be twice that. And they're cavernous and they go back and you have to access them from the floor. So yeah, kitchen cabinets by definition are annoying and difficult to use and a great place to be very ruthless about what you keep in there and what you don't. And to evaluate how many kitchen appliances do you really have to find space for? Like, it's not worth crawling around on the floor or getting up on a ladder to make use of the available kitchen space that exists in order to keep more objects that you don't use very often anyway. The kitchen is a great place to get real about
what I have you actually use.
I have these 37 appliances. But if I use these three, I can accomplish the functionality of all of these, you know, all the rest of these, and I don't have to keep everything.
M shared, my mother actually told me as she was redoing a drawer, you don't have too much if you can make it fit.
That is your mother lying to herself. Okay. But she illustrates my point exactly. If she can make it fit, she doesn't have to give up anything. And what I'm saying is making it fit makes it super hard for you to get to something in there easily. And then you have to know the exact perfect layout to put it all back. And, you know, what a pain. That's just a pain. That's just guaranteed to make me irritated when I'm already irritated in the kitchen anyway.
I want to make one quick announcement.
Yes, and it's time for a tittle.
That too. I want to say thank you to Diana for becoming our newest Patreon supporter. Do you have the sign up, Gail? If you'd like to help support our efforts with a recurring monthly donation of any size, please visit cfhou.com/Patreon. Your contributions help us offset the cost of producing the weekly webcast and will help us fund new projects that we're working on. Thank you for your support, Diana, and all our generous underwriters.
Thank you. We appreciate you so much. I really appreciate that you go to the trouble. It's sort of like, you know, subscribing to an online cable channel. We appreciate that you go and make the effort to give us money. Thank you so much.
I also want to remind everyone that we'll be back for our next live webcast next week, Tuesday, April 11th at noon U.S. Central Time. It's now spring everywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. There may be some far northern reaches where it's still a little bit cold, but it's at least officially spring.
Right.
So we're gonna do a spring cleaning show. So join us next week for that.
Okay.
Why don't you give us the tittle?
Okay, this week's tittle, don't play that game. This week's assignment is to de-tetrisize a congested storage space to make it easier and less stressful to use. So identify an area in your home that suffers from the Tetris syndrome. Any storage space that's carefully organized, but packed so tightly that you have to spend time undoing and redoing the system whenever you need to get something out or put it away. Assess that area. Think about how much volume you would have to free up to make it work more smoothly. Note the categories of stuff that you store in the space. Are you keeping anything here that could be more logically kept somewhere else? Unpack the space, one category at a time, and process the items through your decluttering filters. Do you still love these items? Do you still use them? Do they still support the life that you want? And then repeat this step for each of the categories or types of stuff that you stash in this space that you're working in. Anything you set free is one less thing that will be blocking you from getting at the good stuff that you decide to keep. When you're ready to put stuff back, evaluate the containers you're using too. Are they the most appropriate tools for the purpose? Repack each set of items into the smallest bin, box, or basket that will do the job.
Ideally, something you already had on hand.
Exactly. And then remember, the ultimate goal is an arrangement in which it's easy for you to get out anything you need and easy to put the item away again when you're finished using it. And if you don't have a Tetris organized area in your home, you can still apply these steps to optimize a closet or storage space to better accommodate future additions to your stash.
I'm going to give the last comment to Linda, who says, I think of it this way. Tetris style is appropriate for my backpack or carry-on bag, something I will unpack when I get to my destination. It isn't appropriate for spaces in my house where I need to be able to pluck out or return an item to the space without disturbing everything else.
Excellent job. That was a perfect, perfect analogy to make. I love it. Great instructions. Exactly. You know, you're going to Tetris your luggage because you don't want to pay the extra baggage fee, and you're going to get to the other end and you're going to unpack it all anyway, but you're not going to live with that stuffed luggage and keep it stuffed at your destination because how much of a hassle that is. So perfect analogy. Use it for your luggage. Don't use it for your house. I love it. Thank you, Linda.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere else that you encounter us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me and for indulging me in talking about the NABO conference. I know not everybody cares what I did at conference, but I always have so much fun interacting with my colleagues, and I appreciate being able to talk about it. Love you so much. Thanks for coming. I'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.